That electrician must be a Democrat. Thank you, Mayor and fellow Rachelanians. I am proud to be here today.
Attaboy, Luther!
when I was asked to be guest speaker at this luncheon, I asked myself this. Who are you, Luther Hagues, to be a guest speaker at this luncheon? I thought about my answer about being guest speaker for a long time. What is a guest speaker? Let me clarify this. I have been called brave. What is brave? Let me clarify this. Of course, we all know that it is short for bravery. That goes without even being said. But it is also a symbol of another thing. It is a symbol of doing one's duty no matter what is scaring him personally.
Attaboy, Luther!
Take your World War II. There were many heroes in World War II. What were your heroes? Who were your heroes? Let me clarify this. Thank you for having me.
I like to watch, Eve.
What do you mean, like to watch?
I like to watch.
I'm Don Hall.
This is Donnie Smith.
And this is the I Like to Watch podcast, the podcast that begs the question, was the electrician a Democrat?
Whoa! That's a great one. I love that. The podcast that posits the question, calm? Do murder and calm go together?
Attaboy, Donnie!
Murder? Oh my God, dude, I love this fucking movie so much.
All right, we'll get, but let's, we before a, we get to we the movie, a, get to the guest.
We
yeah,
have an, we have an illustrious guest.
Illustrious
guest.
That's stretching it.
I'm just gonna lay it down. To date, our guest has acted in over 150 film and television roles. Here's just a sampling of his film credits: David Fincher's Fight Club, Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia, Steven Spielberg's AI. As a horror geek, I have to call out David Lynch's Highway, Jeff Burr's Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, and Rob Zombie's Lords of Salem. He has appeared on TV in recurring roles in shows we love: Breaking Bad, Sons of Anarchy, The X-Files, Malcolm in the Middle. He just showed up on my Xbox. What the fuck was I playing like 2 weeks ago? Matilda was at school. L.A. Noire.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
That fucking video game. Yes. So fucking cool. Mike is a phenomenal character actor, a true journeyman artist, if I may. He's one of the finest people I've met in Los Angeles and someone I truly admire. So let's welcome to the show Mr. Michael Seamus Wilde.
Yeah.
Thank you, doing, gentlemen. Buddy? Happy thank to be here.
Thank you for being here. This is awesome.
Rock and roll. Yeah, it's well, we've had directors on. Usually it's just Donnie and I, but lately we've been having guests. We've had directors on, we have stage actors. It's so nice to have someone that's got the acting in film and television sort of pedigree that you have. And his first thing, I mean, bottom line is the minute it's rare for me to know who someone is based on a name that is not like a top of the, but the minute he showed me your name, I was like, fucking Fight Club. So because it's one of my favorite movies of all time. So The minute I saw your name, I knew exactly who you were. It was very funny.
Well, that is a funny credit because for a long time, and not as much now, but for a long time, a lot of times just by my voice, I'd say something and I'd start talking to somebody and someone would go, "Dude, were you in Fight Club?" I'm like, "Yeah." Oh man, it was the voice. I recognized the voice.
Yeah. The thing is that it's a small moment, but it has, you just bring to it a certain amount of gravity and impact that it does stick. It sticks hard. And like I said, the minute I heard your name, it was like, "Oh my God!" So yeah.
Well, thank you, Mike,
if I may wax your car a little bit more, like, you are one of the character actors that, like, the JT Walshes, right? I miss those character actors, and you are seriously one of them that just, you, whenever you show up, you add value and more to a story that's happening. So,
well, to even I just put me wax in the car same a little bit part with him, you know what, I'm a big fan of his, and we've all seen people that you've seen that, you know, I won't say a thousand times, but you've literally seen hundreds of times in films that you love that will pop up in that or on a TV show. And it's like, okay, not a star or anything, but memorable. And just, I'm knocking on wood right now, to be a working actor is a beautiful thing. And I count my lucky stars to be Ernest Glick from Pumpkin Creek and to have had a career, you know. So, you know, knock on wood for that. And, you know, still get to do a few things, but, you know, if I was to drop dead tomorrow, I could leave peaceably, you know?
Yeah. 150 different appearances. I mean, it's almost what it reminds me of is this, they had this thing at the Music Box here in Chicago pretty recently. It was a run of Ennio Morricone films, you know, movies that, okay, he has scored. And one of the things I think is so funny about Ennio Morricone is that he has scored so many films, he doesn't even know how many there are. He has no idea how many, you know, but we know it's well over 500. And so when I hear somebody, it's like, you've been
150 sounds like a piker now, you know, it's like, you know, 500, that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's fair. But it's, you know, the acting thing is different from the, because he never intended on writing film scores. In fact, he looked down on writing film scores when he started. And then it just became the thing he was best at. So it's crazy.
Yeah. All right. I think we all take these convoluted routes because it's not, I mean, I liked acting. I had done some in high school and like junior high, but it was never anything that I thought I was going to do. And I went to a small Division II college, and I originally went on a football scholarship. And it was at a school, Northern Michigan University, up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan in Marquette. And I played 1 year, and we lost every single game. We were terrible. And I'm like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to be doing this professionally. You know, I'm taking a beating this year. I had a friend in the dorm I was living in. He said, "You're a ham bone. Why don't you go out for a play?" And I'm like, "Oh, you guys are too serious." You know, he goes, "Not any more serious than you guys are about playing football." He said, "Why don't you go out for one?" And I went out for a play and got cast in it, went out for another one and got cast in it. And it turned out to be a good thing because I didn't continue playing football. And the money that was helping pay for my education disappeared from that. And I ended up getting a smaller scholarship to go into the theater department, but it grew as it went on. And I'm like, segued into that. And I'm kind of like, you know, people pay me to do this, you know? And then of course I moved to LA and it was like, you know, 8-9 years before even anybody had even, you know, like look at my shoes, you know? So it took a while, but luckily, knock on wood again, you know, something happened and I was able to get a career out of it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, Michael. You are on a, you have been exiled to a desert island.
Okay. All right.
and you only get to bring certain things, like one of everything, with you. Okay, so okay. You're on your and you have no idea how long you're going to be on this desert island. What album, what musical album are you going to bring with you to listen to?
Wow. Am I going to have, Pot on the Island? Because that's going to make a difference. Okay.
Well, we're getting it. We're getting to that. We're getting to that. Yeah.
All right. Well, there's certain things that really resonate with me from when you're a young person, when you're in your 20s and your 30s, there's those, albums that literally shape what your taste becomes. And then you get a little older and you get a little more esoteric and it's like, well, I'm listening to jazz now and I'm listening to more classical and I'm doing other stuff. But Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere by Neil Young. It's got Cinnamon Girl on it. And Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere. It's a phenomenal album, and it's one if, you sit back and have a gummy or smoke a doobie, it'll take you for an extended joyride,
Perfect for a desert island.
All right, and your same one. So I got to stop there because I can ramble on another half dozen.
But that's a good one. So you also read, so you get to bring one book. It can be fiction. It can be nonfiction. It can be any kind of book you want. What's the book you bring in with you?
Okay, let's see. Growing up in Michigan and going to the Upper Peninsula, but there's a gentleman who grew up in Oak Park, and it's Ernest Hemingway. And there are the Nick Adams stories of him growing up in Michigan and him and his family having a cabin in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula, and his fishing and, him being on the cusp of becoming a man and being this guy that ends up going to Europe and being involved in wars and, master sportsman of, deep sea fishing and big game hunting and all this stuff, this quote, man's man. But these are the very formulative scratchings of his, of coming from adolescence and becoming a man and having first loves and being on his own. And, they're short
stories. That's awesome.
Stories. So, you got a few of them, they bury up. So
like a Hemingway deep cut, That is awesome. Yeah. I haven't heard of that book in a long time. I have read it, but long time ago. All right. I know you're married. So, keep this in mind. Your wife's not there. Like Andy Dufresne in The Shawshank Redemption, you get one poster to hang up on the island for you to enjoy and perhaps spank it to. Who's on that poster?
Oh, my God. oh, man. Well, I'm older now, so it has to be a really good poster because it's going to take more to get me going here.
This is what I'm saying, man. Yeah, they got no Viagra or Hymns on this freaking desert island.
Unless,
we'll get to that. But that's not. I don't know if that's mind altering. Yeah, I don't know. Get it. That's head altering, but not mind altering.
If I go on a nostalgic bent, when I was in junior high, I had a poster on my wall of Raquel Welch in 100 BC or whatever it was.
1000 BC, yeah.
I had that on there. But I also, that was the big poster. And I think I had a little picture cut from a magazine of Ally McGraw. And I really liked that too. So it was like the two of them, nowadays, I don't know. I think you give too much yourself away. I can say these, I can cradle these in, you know, my adolescence, and it's like, all right, we'll give them that. It's adolescence. Right now, I don't know who I would right now pick out. It's that's a tough question.
Those are good picks, though, Mike.
They're good picks. They are good picks.
That's classic. All right.
Yeah. Sorry. So far, no one has said what is my nostalgia pick.
What is your nostalgia? What
that
what?
Famous orange swimsuit Farrah Fawcett poster? I had that.
That was a great poster.
Whoa, great baby! Poster. All right. You get one mind-altering substance. You can have as much of it as you want, but you only get to choose one mind-altering substance. What will it be?
You know what? I could go for some good shrooms. I tell you, there was a time, when I was younger, that did them quite a bit. And then it got down to the point where I, once a year, just to clear the cobwebs, you know, clear the cobwebs out. Well, it's been a few years now, and I haven't, you know. Now, I've got gummies, you know, I quit smoking cigarettes, so I quit smoking joints just for the health of the lungs.
Sure.
But I haven't done any mushrooms in a while. And to be on an island like that, hopefully the weather's temperate, you know, and the sun's shining and all that stuff. There was a time I walked down a street in Bangor, the little town I'm from in Michigan, and talked to all the maple trees in this one block, just walking down the block, and had a great conversation and was enlightened by the end of the block, you know. And it's like, I always remember that good conversation with the maple trees on Center Street, you know.
There you go. That's a quality.
I don't know. I end up talking to a coconut on the island. Yeah. I don't know.
You're on the island. You're tripping on shrooms, listening to Neil Young, reading some early Hemingway, and spanking it to Raquel Welch with a little call out to Adam.
Sounds like a car wreck right there.
That's what I'm saying. This is a great image. All right. This is off the island. Any movie ever made in history, any role of any movie in history, what's a role you would love to have played?
You know, the film There Will Be Blood, Paul Thomas Anderson film, Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, you know, tears up that role.
Plainview
looks like it would be a fun role to do.
Yeah.
Because there's all sorts of physicality to it. There's all sorts of chewing the friggin' scenery. There's, you know, the whole range of emotions to go through with this thing. It would be a fun one to do. And I think Paul's a hell of a filmmaker, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Good call. Yes. Yeah. Good call. And all right, awesome. Last question. Can you name a movie that changed your life?
Well, two of them are in this double bill we're talking about. And, you know, I don't know if I should start going into that now or let that come about as we
go in. Yeah. We'll get into it once we get into the films. But, you know, one film after, because then, you know, Because I'm telling you, this double bill, your double bill, this is a cliffhanger for me. If I'm listening to the podcast, I don't want to know anything about it until I get the skinny.
So all right.
I was only two blocks away that awful night at my sister Clara's. We were sort of listening to the organ, you know. The midnight bells were ringing. I turned to Clara and I said, "Clara, the organ music sounds strange tonight."
"Well, what did Clara say?"
"She said, 'Yes, it does.' You know Clara."
"Well, they say there are still bloodstains on the organ keys.
That's right. They've never been able to get them off.
And they use Bon Ami.
All right. Well, cool. All right. So you have picked a film that you like to watch. So why don't you tell us the name of the film? Give us a little plot synopsis, if you want, and tell us why you like to watch this film.
All right. The first film I picked when Don gave me a call and was asking me about this is The Ghost of Mr. Chicken. Now, where I grew up in rural Michigan, we had TV, but we had like two channels, and that was it. And we had a third one. We had a rotor on our antenna so we could get WGN out of Chicago so my dad could watch the Cubs. So, you know, we didn't see a lot. We lived out in the countryside. We were in a small town. The town only had like 1,200 people in it to begin with. So it wasn't a huge town. I think there were like maybe 150 kids in my graduating class. So you were outside. You know, it was that thing, you got let out in the morning and you went out. And so the town I'm from is called Bangor. It's only 10 miles from Lake Michigan. And there's a town on Lake Michigan called South Haven. It had a movie theater. It was big enough that it had a movie theater. People in the summertime, it's kind of a little bit of, it's gotten to be much more of a tourist town, but people come up from Chicago to get out of the city and come up here, and it's rural, small town, kind of a little bit of an art community there, but it's on the lake and you can go swim and do and just putz. Went to a movie theater, the only movie theater, the Michigan in South Haven. And my mom took me, and like I said, the oldest of six kids, and I'm trying to remember, I think it was there, she had four of us in a row like clockwork. Every October, boom, there was another one. Boom, there was another one. Then she took a couple of years off and came back strong with twins. I don't think the twins went. I think it was just the four of us from right in a row, which two are Irish twins born on the same day, a year apart. So we go and we see this movie, and of the two channels we got, of course, Mayberry was on TV, you know, Andy Griffith Show. And I just thought Don Knox was the funniest guy I'd ever seen in my life. You know, Barney Fife and, you know, the bumbling detective or, you know, deputy. And I just, he tickled the shit out of me. And my mom knew that. She goes, oh, well, there's this movie. And she goes, it's a Ghost of Mr. Chicken. And, you know, listen to the title, The Ghost and Mr. Chicken. All right, it's got to be okay for kids. It can't be that scary. You know, it's got Don Knox in it. So we go and see it. And it's this guy. And, I'm probably not going to remember everything completely about it, but, you know, he's in this small town. His name's Luther. He's kind of got this one girl that he likes, but he's kind of a schlub. It's kind of a little bit of a stock Don Knox character, you know, and everyone takes him for granted and, you know, just kind of ignores him. And there's been a, years ago in this house, and Don, you probably know, you're probably going to go, oh, that's not quite what happened.
Well, we both, Donnie and I both watched it this week, so.
Okay, oh, yeah. I haven't seen it in years, and I still haven't seen it in years. Oh. And it's, I know there's a murder that happened in this house. There's some shady shenanigans that are going on with some people in the town, and, you know, he's got to spend a night in this house. Well, there's this organ that plays in the house. And
the blood stains on it.
Nobody had it. Blood stains on the keys. I got the hair on the back of my neck went up today, just on the back of my neck when I started thinking about that scene. Because when I was a kid and I saw it in that movie theater, it scared the shit out of me. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I know he ends up getting the girl and he's happy at the end. He ends up getting married and, you know,
I think she was Miss November of 1958.
Was she really?
Yeah.
Seriously? Like a Playboy Playmate?
No. Yeah, legit. Keep talking.
Wow.
I'll pull that.
Well, no. I know. No idea. She was in one of the Oceans movies, wasn't she?
Well, I keep talking. Yeah. I'll keep going.
I think she was. She did. She had credit. She had done some stuff. But she was a lovely young lady, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Joan Stanley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not all I can remember.
Yeah. So,
she was a blonde.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things Donnie and I've talked about in the past is, you know, it's like there are picks that we'll pick because, oh, hey, this is a great, you know, this is a movie we really like to watch. And then there are the picks where it's like, yeah, I remember this when I was a kid and it had such a lasting impact on me. Like one of Donnie's was Clue. For me, it was Harold and Maude, because that was the first movie I ever saw. So I get that this was a movie that really made an impact on you when you're a kid. I love the idea that, yeah, you go to this one fucking theater in the fucking boonies, which when you're describing Bangor, it sounds like Rachel, Kansas, which is where this film takes place.
Well, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons it resonated with me, that the whole setup in this town, the hierarchy of the town, and the pecking order of who was important and who wasn't kind of mirrored what I had on some subliminal level recognized in my own town. And as I got older, I was able to process that and go, you know, that's probably one of the reasons it still makes an impact on me. And if it wasn't the first film I saw, it was pretty close to the first film, because I really don't remember seeing anything else really before that. And it was a big one. And most of the time when I say the title, nobody knows what the fuck it is. Now, I got the biggest kick out of that when I said it to Don, and he's like, "Oh yeah,
that's exactly Luther,"
you know. And I was like,
it's a classic.
You recognize that? I have another friend of mine named Kevin Meyer, who's a filmmaker, screenwriter, and he was like the only other guy I knew. He goes, "Oh yeah, that Don Knotts movie. I love that movie." You know, so
I just don't know. Like in the pantheon of films, Don Knotts to me is like a singular actor. Like, you think of people, like, there's this thing that's been going around Twitter recently where it's like, name one actor who played a role who just killed it and no one else could play that role. And I'm like, Don Knotts in everything ever. Like, Don Knotts. Knotts.
Well, the thing that's interesting about Don Knotts,
it's like Marty Feldman. Remember, you guys know
Marty Feldman. Oh, yeah, Marty Feldman. Okay. Yeah.
Right. But Don Knotts was the leading man.
Yeah,
like what?
Well, the thing funny is he did a string of movies. He did a string that like The Ghost of Mr. Chicken is definitely one of the highlights. I think The Incredible Mr. Limpet is also
phenomenal.
Seriously notable. But what was funny about that, and there was a time period, and I think you can see some of that Bart. The mall cop, that guy, Kevin James.
Kevin James.
There is a type of movie where it's going to take this one actor, and Jerry Lewis was among those who does really one thing. He does one thing.
Good. It's good.
He does one thing, and he does it incredibly well, and nobody else does it better than this person. So we're going to build a series of movies around that one character that does, even to the Apple Dumpling Gang, which was he and Tim Conway,
right?
He's still playing the same basic shtick, but his shtick it's perfect. There's no reason to change it because no one.
How does that shtick work in this situation?
It's the Three Stooges. It's Laurel and Hardy. It's Buster Keaton. Here's this same character, this actor that does this one thing incredibly well. We're now going to put them in this situation and see how that plays out. And it's part of the charm of The Ghost of Mr. Chicken is the script is basically a Scooby-Doo thing. You know, there's no real ghost. You know, it's a Scooby-Doo. Yeah. But yeah. And it's not a great script when you look at it, but it is definitely funny. Oh. There's so many. I mean, so I don't know how many times that random guy. I want to know that guy. I want to know who the
guy
is.
I'll tell you exactly who it is.
He says that like 15 times in the movie. It's the funniest shit I ever heard.
It is.
Attaboy, Luther. Attaboy, Carl.
Oh, yeah.
Attaboy, Judge.
And like the rule of threes with comedy, right?
But he
this
like
goes above
times.
And beyond, dude. It goes above and beyond to the point where it becomes absurd, and that's why it's fucking funny. And I'll tell you who it is. I'll tell you who it is.
Who it
His
is
name
it?
Is yeah. Everett Greenbaum. He wrote.
Of course, it is.
He also wrote a shit ton of episodes of The Andy Griffith Show and a shit ton of episodes of MASH. He's like a real big.
He's a serious
real
writer,
big writer. Real big fucking writer.
Yeah, I call like, that phenomenon like when you break the rules of three. I've always called it the Beavis and Butthead rule.
Because
if you do it three times, the button. If you get to five, fucking just do it so many goddamn times that at some point it becomes like a Dada experiment of nonsense, and it just becomes silly to hear. And that was the Attaboy, because he Attaboy is the mayor. He had a boy as Luther. He had a boy as the judge. He had a boy as, I mean, he had a boy as everybody.
I love that he wrote for the Andy Griffith Show. That totally
it's brilliant.
Makes sense.
Well, no, I mean, Alan Rafkin directed. I mean, part of the reason this movie came together so quickly is because everyone involved was already involved. It was just like, hey, let's slapdash put this thing together. Let's make a movie, right? Like,
we know we can do it. We know
but
we can do it.
Damn it, if it didn't pull it off, like, it's a fun.
Very entertaining.
This to me is one of those movies. I've called a couple out on the show before, Mike. I call them gateway horror films, where it's like it's not like super scary, but it's got like some kind of like weird,
it's
like
got
a weird
its
vibe.
Moment.
It's odd.
It's got
its like a Munsters kind of
situation.
Like
it or not, scared or not scared. I mean, if you're a little kid, then the organ scares you. But the image of the shears, in the portrait with the blood coming down.
That's
like okay. They went the distance with this one, because even if I weren't Don Knotts, even if I weren't Mr. Limpet, I'd still freak me out. And that's fun.
Well, that's what
they never, by the way, they never explain why how the bloods were running down. But
Snow White, I took my daughter to see Snow White when literally she was probably like 3 or 4 years old, and she's sitting on my lap in the movie theater. And when the queen makes her reveal and turns into the witch, she turned around and started climbing over my shoulder like, get me the fuck out of here, you know?
Yeah.
There are those moments within this pastoral, seemingly, you know, very normal situation, these moments of horror, these moments of terror, that are real, real effective because of the contrast of what they're played against.
And part of the fun is... Oh, go ahead.
Done. No, no.
I mean, part of the fun of that is that before you actually find out that it's all the contrivance of the Scottish or Irish gardener, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen a movie as old as I am. You know, it's just, I mean, it was 1966. That's when I was born. So this movie is literally my age.
No, it's but, spoiler proof.
Yeah, spoiler proof. But one of the things, and it's to me, I think it's classic. This is as classic as Chekhov. All the greatest is before he ever steps foot in that house, everybody is kind of terrified of him, that nobody believes he's going to do it. The three old ladies in the boarding house are like, they don't know if he's coming back. I mean, the setup, all of this anticipation that he's going to die in this house adds to the fun of him going through the coal chute and then throwing the book at the door and the wall opens. And all of that shit is like, oh, fuck. Everybody's so scared for him. So then when you see the ridiculousness is when he doesn't even write the article that says it, they kind of ghostwrite it.
The janitor. The initial article.
Then they make him the hero of the town and have a picnic lunch with the band and the accordion player. Exactly. And one of my favorite lines. And the reason it makes me laugh is it's funny when the mayor says it, and then it's even funnier when Don Knotts says it and doesn't get a laugh. It's just like is the electrician a Democrat? And then Don Knotts, his papers blow away and he doesn't know what to say. So he does the same joke. It's so funny.
Allow me to clarify.
There's some great setup. Allow me to
clarify.
Yeah,
it never clarifies.
Yeah, like, the writing, like I said,
is so good.
What works for this writing is it is absolutely there's this tradition. If you look at like the early Groucho Marx films, a lot of films that came out of vaudeville were just repeating bits from when they did vaudeville because they knew that worked. And what's really funny about this movie is, and I didn't realize that the writer wrote for Andy Griffith or MASH, but when you look at Andy Griffith and MASH, it's set up bit, set up laugh, set up laugh. Yeah. This movie is a longer setup. I mean, the beginning is funny, but it's all set up. And as soon as he gets in the house, it's just from that point on, it's just here's a joke.
Yeah.
And it just boom, boom, boom. It just bombards you with funny. And then it gets to the end when he gets married. And even the wedding has laughs. Yeah.
What do you say, Mike?
And he makes him pay off.
He really does. Yeah. He's got great comic timing.
Yeah, the guy's fucking face is just, it's gold. It's like, he's not pretty. I mean, he's not pretty. Like,
no, he's goofy looking.
The fact that he was a leading man.
Didn't he do a movie called The Love God or something like that too?
Yes.
I want to see that. That sounds bizarre. Like
hold on.
Sex
hold
symbol. On. The Love God.
Winner is
Don Knotts. Don Knotts.
I want to see. And of course, that's what.
Oh, 1969. It's The Love God question mark, though. I got to be honest.
That's the title. All right, that makes sense.
The Love God question mark. Yeah. So
I love there are moments in this movie that I think to me it just and I know it just I would have to back it up and laugh because I know it literally the director was just like, hey, mug scared. And then it would be these elongated double takes and triple takes with his bug eyes. Nothing else is happening, but that by itself is just funny. Yeah. It's like back and forth.
And it's gold, but it's like. But if the writing wasn't there, then there would be no setup to do the comedy, right? Like
exactly. I agree.
That's what's so fucking cool about the script and the fact that like he was in on the script and like developing blah blah blah. Like it really fucking shows. It holds up. Like it's not gonna fucking blow your mind. It's not fucking Oppenheimer, whatever. But like, this is a really cool kind of like cross genre film.
Yeah.
That really sets up like a lot of shit. Other shit would have not happened if it weren't for the Ghost of Mr. Chicken.
And I'll be honest with you. One of the things that, because again, and we're going to get to your double bill. When I was thinking about my double bill, I kind of went through, it's like, oh, wait, so maybe I want to do an Elvis movie because Elvis movies were just a vehicle for Elvis to be Elvis. Some of them were well-written. Some of them had Anne Margaret in them. Great.
You say that because one of the trailers during this Don Knotts movie at the Michigan Theater in South Haven was an Elvis movie. And I swear to God, did Elvis ever do kind of like a horror movie that there was a Wolfman in?
Oh, I don't know, but I would pay to see that movie.
All right, so I don't know if this is like just a jumble of different things I saw when I was a kid, when I was at the movies, and maybe one of them was Elvis, and maybe one of them was Wolfman, and in my mind they blended. But it seems to me that like Elvis was getting chased by a werewolf. So, you know, and that could have had something to do with the mushrooms too. I don't know. You know,
Harum Scarum.
I don't know. I don't
was
know.
It? Yeah. Harum Scarum was a film that Elvis Presley, I think it's 1960.
But I love there was a time period. It's sort of like, and I'm going to deviate real quick to television just very quickly, and then I'll get back to my point. But there was a period in the 70s where, you know, you had these variety shows, you know, with the Osmonds, and fucking everybody had a variety show. And they were so goofy because there was no video. You know, there was no video cassette. Nobody thought they'd be seen again. You know, and so they could just kind of fucking do anything they wanted. And it was all sort of this cult of personality thing. In the 50s and the 60s, there were a lot of movies that were, and it wasn't that they didn't think anybody was going to see them again because they were film, but there were a lot of these cult of personality sort of like, let's get this. Jerry Lewis is actually, I think, a perfect example. I mean, think, all right, what's the plot of The Bellboy? There's no fucking plot to The Bellboy. It's Jerry Lewis being Jerry Lewis in a series of bits.
Sure.
Yeah. There was a real period of time. And it's good. And it's seriously good. It's hysterical.
That's a 60s version. I think it's 60s, right? Did you say 60s?
I think so. Yeah.
But throwback to Chaplin or
yeah, there was a whole period of this, really, and you had Bobby Darin. He did some of that stuff. He did some westerns that made no sense for him to do, but they were, you know, and so what I love about Don Knotts had a bunch. I mean, he had a real run of films, and like I said, to me. Career. Mr. Limpet's my favorite, but that's the one I remember seeing when I was a kid. You know what I mean? That's the one I was like, oh my God, I love the animation. Yeah. It was just too much fun.
This one to me, again, Mike, you know, I'm a fucking horror movie geek. So like this one to me it hits that real like sweet spot of nostalgia for me where it's like, yeah, this is how I got into the fucking horror movies. It's like this and Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein and the ghost. I think it's called The Ghost Catchers with
that sounds right.
Jerry Lewis. What's his name?
Well, Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin.
Bob the Kid. Come on, guys.
Was Bob Hope in that?
Bob Hope. Thank you.
Jesus. Yeah.
Bob Hope. Yes.
Yeah, so, it's a lot of fun. Good quality pick.
Super
good
old
quality pick, man.
Horror shit. I love it.
Yeah,
I
love it. Love it. I thought about this. Like I said, I tend to let Donnie pick his, and then I try to find a different version, you know, like a different direction. And so I actually went. You know, I watched the film and I thought, all right, what does this make me feel like? Aside from the laughs, what does it make me feel like? And I thought, it's a strange movie, not in a bad way, but it's a horror comedy. And that's not always, I mean, I'm thinking of a million horror comedies that don't work. This one does. And so I thought, what's one of my favorite horror comedies? And it is Peter Jackson's 1996 The Frighteners. Okay, it's got Michael J. Fox, and he actually does see ghosts, and one of the ghosts is like a disco black guy with a giant fro, and then there's a nerd, you know, I mean, you got all, and so you see, but then you also have Jake Busey, Gary Busey's kid, playing a serial killer ghost. You've got Arlie Army, is that his name? The sergeant.
The husband.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, I knew Jake Busey was in it.
And then
I can't remember who the husband is.
Michael J. Fox.
Arlie Ermey
plays a ghost, it's Michael J. Fox, whose wife has died, and he's got this clairvoyance, and it's just, first of all, it's very funny, and it's really fucking scary, and
it's Peter Jackson right before the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, it,
you know, he.
It's I've yeah, seen it I, once. I've seen it.
Yeah,
once.
It's one of my favorite Peter Jackson films. It really is. I love it.
I'll have to review. I literally only saw it once.
I think it's. Like I said, it's one of those movies where.
Yeah.
I'm probably an outlier in that I really love that movie, but I think it pairs well. And I think what I would do is I would invite families, like Donnie's family, and it'd be families, and we watch The Ghost and Mr. Chicken. And then anybody that was 10 years old or older could stay to watch The Frighteners, you know, because it's funny, but it's also really scary.
It's solidly in that, again, gateway horror, I would call it.
Yeah.
So that's intro to horror, the Gremlins or whatever. Yeah, no, I love them.
Exactly.
I love
that. That's my double feature. All right, Donnie, what's your double feature, man?
Mine is The Private Eyes from 1980, also starring Don Knotts.
Okay, there you go.
Co-led by Tim Conway. Tim Conway wrote the film, was directed by Lane Elliott. It's like a kind of murder mystery type situation thing in a house, a giant house, the Biltmore Estate, actually, in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, I've been there. That's huge.
It's fucking massive.
Being There was shot there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Oh, Being There was shot there?
Yes, it was. And Being There is one of my all-time favorite films.
That's a great movie.
That is one of my yes.
Love that movie.
Yes. Yes.
I'm glad you picked Private Eyes because I love the fact that Don Knotts does it, and then he and Tim Conway are such a great pairing.
They have that chemistry, and the fact that those movies could exist.
I've seen them in the Apple Dumpling.
Oh, really?
They definitely do, but I've never seen that, so I've got to.
That's why I didn't mention. Look, I mentioned the Apple Dumpling Gang, but I didn't want to say Private Eyes because I knew he was coming up with this. So yeah, I love it.
It's fun. It's definitely silly. It's not, you know.
But sure.
Like, to me, it does. It feels like the cool side of a pillow when you've been sleeping for a while. You want to flip that pillow over, you get that cool side, and it's like that. That's what this movie feels like to me. I love The Private Eyes. It's not that easy to find. I don't think it's streaming anywhere. You have to.
No, it's not streaming.
But you can get a fucking DVD
so what, for $2. Yeah. No. So what order are we going to watch these two films in?
My order, 100%, I would do Ghost of Mr. Chicken and then Private Eyes. Like, yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
All right.
And just like, you know, smoke a joint. Like, have fun. Just
there you go. Exactly. It's just about relax, having
have
some
a
fun.
Joint, have a drink.
And now we're going to have a jarring evening. We're going to have a double bill that's going to be a little freaky. And I've been waiting for this whole conversation. So, Michael, tell us what your double bill is and how this is not going to traumatize me.
All right. Well, double bill. My double bill is The Ghost of Mr. Chicken, and Taxi Driver. Wow. And my line of logic for this is describing this film as I had to you. I'm a young kid. It's very much resonating with me in that it's a very small town, a very, I don't want to use the word cliche, but it's, you know, you got Orson Welles kind of sended this whole thing up when he did The Magnificent Ambersons of a town and the hierarchy of the town and how everyone had their accepted somewhat roles of what they were within the pecking order of this town. All right. But it's idealitic in a certain kind of way. It's not abrasive. It's not, you know, punching you over the head, hitting you hard. And it's more a happy, good feeling to it. All right, so you leave that. I saw this as a very young kid, and it was affected on me. So I get older. I've gone to college for 1 year already. I'm still trying to figure out who I am, what I'm doing. I played football, but I'm looking like I'm getting into acting and whatnot. And I go back in the summertime, and I've got a girlfriend in the little town I'm from. And, you know, What do? We go to the movies. We drive all the way 30 miles to go to Kalamazoo. So we go to the movies there. And the only thing I knew about this, not it's not like you get slammed with trailers and information like you do now about everything that comes out. Right. Articles.
Right. Right.
I would get the Benton Harbor Palladium and it have a picture of whatever the movie was.
Right.
And there was a picture for Taxi Driver. And I think it was just like Robert De Niro, like a full body shop and maybe a car behind him and a Taxi Driver. And I can't even remember what the tagline was in the picture. But I looked at that and I'm like, all right, that looks like it might be interesting. I know nothing about it. Nothing about it.
It's the best way to see a movie.
I read and I go, okay, Cybill Shepherd. All right. Well, I saw her. I think I've seen Nashville. A picture of her. She's kind of cute. You know, I don't know this Robert De Niro guy. I don't know who that Martin Scorsese. I don't know any of that. Don't know who they are. Nothing. So I get my girlfriend. We drive up to Kalamazoo and we see this movie. And this movie unfolds. And I'm like, holy fuck, what is this? And it's the seedy underbelly of the big city. And I'm like I was saying earlier, Ernest Glick from Pumpkin Creek. And I'm like watching this stuff and it literally is blowing my mind. And I'm going, oh my God, the big city, the real Big Apple. This is what it's like. And it involves politics and it involves, you know, social status and, you know, being maybe a little schizophrenic and having, you know, not sleeping for days and being strung out in this way. And then trying to make sense of all that and trying to be something good. And through the mere chance happenstance of not killing anybody and killing the bad guy and saving the girl. Not that that was planned, but by happenstance, how it just plays out and works that way, that he comes around to this, quote, hero position. And so, you know,
that's good logic, man.
Figure out where I am in this and figuring out that, you know, things, whatever road you go down, it's not necessarily because there was a ton of thought behind this, you know, and some people do. Some people are very analytical and, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's the next step. And then there's some of us that like 1, 7, 9, 14, you know, going all over the place trying to make that road work, which is much more the road.
My road. Donnie and I've talked about
I'm thinking, here we have the two sides of two different stratas here. And the small town, you know, good guy, you know, who honestly is trying to take these steps and be a good person and build on this and have, quote, the American dream of, you know, the girlfriend and, you know, the little town. And then you get here, and maybe those expectations have totally blown up into something else.
Yeah.
So it's
it's
a big leap from one to the other. But
it makes sense.
When you ask me that, you know, it's like, all right, well, what would you pair this with? And for some reason, boom, that popped right into my head. And I'm like, and I had to think about it for a little bit. Oh, well, why would you pair it with that? You just heard that. Those are my reasons.
I mean, but it's really fascinating that Taxi Driver is 10 years later than, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was how fast Hollywood changed. That's
76.
That's how fast Hollywood had changed. It changed so much.
Just that version of entertainment, and like Taxi Driver was subversive at the time in a big way, but like, yeah, that's fascinating. You brothers.
Well, part of the reason that that it changed so fast was that the Hays Code was done away with and was replaced by the rating system, and that gave auteurs of the early 70s a lot more bandwidth to play with, a lot more like ways to demonstrate things. What I really liked about now, again, I had no idea. I was walking home from this play I saw, which I liked very much, and I was thinking, if I'm going to pick a Scorsese movie that pairs with The Ghost of Mr. Chicken, I'm probably going to pick King of Comedy because it's a buffoon that makes good. However, the way you describe it is, because now that you say it, it's sort of like they're kind of the same character. You know, De Niro's taxi driver is desperate for sort of attention. He wants to be a big deal, but he's not a big deal. And he sees this woman that he's completely into, who's not into him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's doing everything he can to kind of figure out how he can really get the girl. Because it, for whatever you want to say about The Ghost of Mr. Chicken, the beginning and the end is I want the girl and she's with
Alma,
Ollie.
Alma, you know, Miss November of 1950.
And I get the girl at the end. And so he gets a different girl through happenstance. I actually kind of think that's kind of a brilliant way of looking at it. So what order are we going to watch these films in,
Michael? It's got to be Don Knox first. You've got to start out not getting bludgeoned over the head first. You can't follow that up. Take the journey. The small, easier to digest version before you get taken to the seedy underbelly. And it's Ulysses on his journey to be the hero at the end of the journey in both, you know, and they both, you know, not necessarily because of good planning on their parts, but of just who they are getting through become, quote, these heroes at the end of their films, you know?
Yeah, and really, you know, Don Knotts, his karate, his whole body is a weapon. He defeats the bad guy by throwing himself on the guy. Like, literally throwing his body onto him because he pops him, and the guy doesn't even feel it.
I just have to throw it out there. Just for what was happening kind of like just in the pop culture of 66, you had Antonioni's blow up, Nichols, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, mm-hmm. Alfie, Our Man Flint, the first Django movie, The Russians Are Coming, Munster Go Home, which apparently this movie was a big like double feature with.
That makes sense.
The original Batman movie came out with Burt Ward and
Burt Adam West.
Woody Allen's feature debut, What's Up, Tiger Lily, and the super fucked up Brando performance in Tea House of the August Moon.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So just to say what was going on in kind of like the ether of 66, this movie is really fucking funny. It's like a nice blanket. It's cute. I love this.
So basically, Donnie, you're going to go to Michael's double feature and you're going to have your nice blanket.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have the blanket ripped out in front of you and you're going to be bludgeoned to death.
And you get slapped.
I'm going to smoke the blanket.
Give me that blanket.
I'm going to smoke the blanket and I'm going to lose my fucking mind with taxi driver. Oh my God.
Rock and roll.
I haven't seen Mike, I did not get a chance. I when we talk about a lot of these movies, I like to try to watch the movies that are being discussed. I did not get a chance to rewatch Taxi Driver recently. It's such a good movie, man.
I actually watched it randomly like six months ago. I watched it 6 months ago. It's one of the things right now I'm reading.
I mean,
I'm reading Tarantino's Cinema Speculations right now, and it's making me go back and watch, like when you mentioned Ally McGraw, and then we talked about Cybill Shepherd. I love the fact that in The Getaway, the director really, really, really wanted Cybill Shepherd because she fit the profile from the book. Texan, kind of broad-shouldered, that kind of thing. But they wanted all the powers that be, because even when they pulled it from Paramount, they were pushing Ally McGraw. And, you know, and she got panned at the time, but I love Tarantino's take. It's now when I watch it, yeah, it makes sense and it works. So it's just like, I think that's, I love how all of that comes together in such a very unique. So yeah, I've been watching a lot of,
and I'm going to throw this out there too.
70s films.
We just talked about a movie that was shot on the back lot at Universal. The Burbs, the Joe Dante Burbs film with Tom Hanks. This movie was also shot on that exact same back lot. It's called Old Colonial Street. Yeah, Don, I'm going to throw this out there again at you. They'll never make a movie like this again.
Well, no, they made a cartoon like this called Scooby-Doo every episode.
You dick. Okay. I love you. I love you. If I didn't love you, I'd fucking hate you, but I love you.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. That's, you know, getting your growth is half my fun, you know. Yeah, so, Michael, do you have anything that you want to plug? Is there anything coming up that you want people to know about?
You know what? It's, I got a couple of things. I got one that's in post right now that, you know, Jeff Phillips, don't you, Don?
Yes, sir.
I'm pretty sure Corinne knows him. He's been around. I've known him for quite a while. He has been in a lot of things, but has gotten well known for being in a lot of Rob Zombie films. And in fact, he's, you know, Herman Munster in his last film. Right. Well, he's always wanted to do another horror film, and he's got some horror characters that he does. Oh God, I'm not sure what their one name of, but he comes out when Rob's doing his band shows, and will come out with this character. Oh,
the kind of Svengoolie, you know, the Svengali character.
Characters in some of Rob's films.
Yeah.
Well, he wrote this movie, and we shot it. And it's called Cursed in Baja.
Oh, and yeah.
I detected in that.
I saw that and on there's his
Jacqueline
Instagram.
Wright's in it. You know, there's a bunch of, you know, the usual suspects in this group that are in this film.
Very cool.
And there's another film that's in post right now. There's another film that I'm working on right now that I'm still shooting on called Everybody Asked About You. And it's kind of a film noirish, kind of I want to say like a European film, in the sense that it's about Hollywood and it's about a woman and her journey and how she's been chewed up by Hollywood and her boyfriend slash, you know, pimp kind of slash, you know, lover who keeps, you know, hooking her up with these deals that, you know, she was a child star and kind of made the transition to being an adult actress, but, you know, is starting to get older now. And it's just showing how Hollywood can become this ugly thing. And I play, her father committed suicide and her mother was pushing her in pageants. Well, I play her father's brother and I'm a ghost. And she's the only one who can see me. And I'm like trying to get her out of these fucked up situations. And I'm kind of like a memory fragment because, you know, parts of dialogue pop up of stories I told her when she was a kid and, you know, that you got to stay away from these people and whatnot. So I'm like this gray kind of specter, and it's not like any special effect or, you know, it's kind of like I'm there and then I'm not there, you know, and, you know, I'll be talking to her and there may be other people in the room, but nobody can see me. Nobody can hear me. And I'm like, I haven't played a ghost. You know, I'll try that.
Yeah, why not? Let's give it a shot. Yeah, why not?
Played a shitload of detectives, played a shitload of bad guys. I haven't played a ghost.
And played a ghost. That sounds awesome.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Well, thank you, Michael. This was a blast.
Thank you for, you know, having me in.
We'd love to have you back sometime. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it again. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. That was awesome. I love it.
Well, that's the show.